When I wrote to you requesting this meeting, I asked that the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Governance brief us. Now, I know that neither of the ministers are here, and I am concerned that there is no political responsibility being taken for these actions.
No. The chairman, they said to be here, the meeting, I think, would be briefed. And then from there, briefing would see then whether there was anything that is lacking from the briefing on that. I think we should do that with everything. And Director General, I think we are more committed anyway to assist us on some of the issues, such as here, take us through, we'll have our own discussion. If we need a focus discussion, we'll also reconvene another meeting with the Minister of Health discussion on that. But the briefing will assist all of us, ladies. But I stand over that opinion for that.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Good morning to you and the honourable members. Let me also acknowledge the leadership, the presence of the leadership of SALGA and our colleagues from the Treasury. Captain, we've been asked to come and visit the committee, and the request was couched in such a way that the expectation is that we must come and provide reasons why the equitable share has been withheld from municipalities. The decision to withhold is essentially that of the Treasury. So, to that extent, what we will do in the course of the presentation we will give, draw from the presentations that Treasury has given to a number of forums within government, including some of on which I sit. But we will also draw from presentations also shared by the Department of Public Enterprise, as well as the Department of Public Works, on matters that may be germane to the discussion we'll have with the committee this morning. Mr. Sigidi, who is our Deputy Director General, responsible for intergovernmental fiscal relations, and who works very closely with the Treasury on these matters, will walk us through the presentation that's been circulated, as I understand it. At the end of it, Chairperson will be happy to engage with these matters, as you please. Perhaps I must also take this opportunity to tender the Minister's apology for not being here today. He's otherwise engaged, and he's requested us to convey to their committee is that he would have loved to be here. Were it not for the fact that he's otherwise engaged, he certainly would be here. But I also take a leave from what Mr. Said, Chellison, that if there should still be a need for a discussion at a political level, that can still be convened for honourable members of the minister to engage, perhaps including the leadership of SALGA that is here present today. But otherwise, this is going to be the first opportunity that the committee is being briefed on the substance of the matters that were taken into account by the Treasury and various players in this regard. The chairperson, what we also thought we would do as a bigger party, as part of this presentation, is to go beyond a briefing on the reasons why Treasury took the decision to withhold, but to talk about what efforts are being made alongside efforts that the Treasury is making in giving effect to the decision to withhold. We will also give an update on efforts we are making with regard to getting government departments to pay their debt owing to municipalities, because we believe that those matters are inextricably intertwined to the extent that debt owing by national and provincial governments and municipalities may be contributing to the inability of municipalities to pay that debt to ESCOM. We'll be able to give you an indication of progress made in that regard, and we believe that although the methods are not yet final, significant progress has been recorded in that regard. So that will form part of the briefing we will give you this morning. Mr.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, the leadership of SALGA, the presentation is going to cover a little bit of the background and some introductory matters that the DG has talked about, and the process that has been undertaken and the engagement that we have held both from ourselves as well as SALGA, the engagement that we had with Treasury immediately when the decision to withhold became imminent. The Minister of Finance raised concerns regarding the escalation of the municipal debt to Eskom and Water Board, and he alerted the Minister of Water and Sanitation as well as our Minister that he would be considering implementing Section 2162 of the Constitution with the view of getting the affected ministers to sign the payment agreements with Eskom and Water Board. Chairperson, I'm also certain to say that the issue of payment agreement with Eskom specifically is an issue that we have been engaging with the various municipalities on. Now, on the 31st of March, Treasury issued the statement, press statement on the decision to withhold the equitable share. On the initiative of SALGA, we met with the Treasury colleagues to raise some few concerns regarding the timing element of the press statement, and that Treasury indicated that they will be effecting the withholding from the 20th of March to about 16 municipalities. And the reason was due to the failure to honor the financial commitments in general and to pay Eskom, and especially the bulk creditors in particular. And they were doing that in line with what is provided for in Section 65 of the Municipal Finance Management Act. Their view was that accounting officers are not really taking part of their fiduciary responsibility. Now, in the introduction, is just giving what are some of the anecdotes which led to that particular decision. Chair, we are all aware about the issue of load shedding and the establishment of the war room by government to look at those five critical areas to assist Eskom not to load shed, and also challenges of Eskom in meeting the electricity demand, and some of the recommendations of the war room which went to various stakeholders like NERSA, and the issues around debt owed to Eskom by municipalities and debt owed to municipalities by government, and most importantly, the issues of municipalities not honoring their payment agreement that they have with Eskom, and ultimately the need to address the culture of non-payment by municipalities, which may extend to households not paying municipalities. I think we are aware that the highest percentage of debt owed to municipalities is by households. The objective of the process, I just need to indicate that after that meeting with the Treasury, Treasury had announced around 59 municipalities that they were going to withhold. And on the other hand, ESCOM then issued a statement on the 20 municipalities that they said they were going to withhold. So the minister convened a meeting of mayors and the accounting officers of municipalities, where we invited also Treasury to bring in the reasons why they were taking that particular action. And as the DG has said, this presentation is also taking into account some of the issues that Treasury raised in terms of the objectives of the process. Now, the objective was really to understand why municipalities are unable to pay creditors on time and conform to the 30 days MFNA requirement, and broadly to address the culture of non-payment by municipalities, which in our view that is that if you're not paying creditors, then this might lead to liquidity problems and budget problems, which might indicate some form of problems in the leadership. It should also be noted that the non-payment to entities affect the investor confidence in the and in ESCOM's case, this impacts negatively on their balance sheet. It is also intended that this practice that is currently applied to municipalities around withholding of the equitable share is also going to be instituted across the 3 tiers of government. So provincial governments that are owing municipalities, as well as national governments that are owing municipalities, we have reached a point where we are saying Treasury must also take that particular view. Now, with regard to the specific service delivery responsibilities of local government, I'll jump that slide because it's just providing us with the objective of local government and some of the developmental duties of local government, as well as the priority functions that local government has. Now, the information that is on slide 7 around debt owed to ESCOM by municipalities as at December 2014 by province, it will indicate the current one. The current one is between 0 and 30 days, which in terms of the MFME requirement is not yet regarded as an area debt. Now, you will note that on the area debt side, which is your column on the far right, municipalities are owing ESCOM for their in areas for about 4.5 billion. You have the figures there, Eastern Cape 155 million, Free State municipalities 1.6 billion. Gauteng municipalities 169 million, KZN 54 million, Limpopo 136 million, Mpumalanga 1.5 billion, and the figures are illustrated there. And the slide after that is that a slide on the 20 municipalities that ESCOM had issued a notice to cut the electricity supply with effect from June 2015. It is also indicating the area debt on the far right. And if you look at that area debt, it's around 4.5 billion as indicated in the various provinces. So those are the 20 municipalities that are indicated in the slide 8. Now on slide 9 we then looked at the debt owed to water boards by municipalities as of December 2014. I need to indicate that the figures might have changed with the results in the last quarter of the financial year, but these are the figures as at the end of December 2014. You will note that the water board were owed 2.3 billion, which is debt in areas, and the current one being 1.3 billion. Now, with regard to the top 10 municipalities that are owing the water board, you find that those are the municipalities that are owing the water board, and it's totaling the 2.3 billion that has been indicated earlier. On slide 11 is debt owed by national departments to municipalities. When you look at that debt in areas, it's up to 1.3 billion. And on slide 11 is in terms of provinces. The provinces are owing municipalities 1.8 billion. Now the next slide, which I believe that is directly the slide that the Treasury presented to us in the meeting that we had with the 20 municipalities, is talking about the process that Treasury had engaged on to encourage municipalities to pay. And I wouldn't want to dwell much on that slide because Treasury will be given the chance, will be able to run through that particular slide and the following slide, which talks about the general observation that Treasury had seen. Importantly, Chair, I would perhaps want to draw the attention of the committee on some of the future issues of policy that we thought these are the issues that we are currently engaging with ESCOM on. We are concerned about some of the practices ESCOM is using in the billing of municipalities. And we are going to be engaging ESCOM on this matter. One of those is the ESCOM's requirement for 15-day payment period for the current account, which contradicts the 30 days payment rule as at the MFMA. I think that is a very critical matter because it might mean that ESCOM is charging interest on an account that is still not yet due. Secondly, the escalating interest charge on area debt as a result of ESCOM's policy to impose the interest rate of this. I've already mentioned that. And third, penalties charged as a result of municipalities exceeding their notified maximum demand. In this particular case, I will elaborate further in the slide to come because there's an element of from the side of ESCOM and also from the side of municipalities in terms of how they manage the electricity business. Now, what is COPTA's view on the process that has been entered into by Treasury? From where we are sitting, we are reading principles with the principles and the objectives that the Treasury has put forward, because those were the principles and objectives that we discussed in the war room. However, we felt, this is what we raised with the Treasury colleagues when we met with the Mazalga, that we felt that it would have been better if we could have discussed the mechanism, especially around the timing issues, because you can't expect municipalities to have a council meeting within a week. Even when it is a special council, it might be very difficult to have the issues around council resolution because they had elaborated what those municipalities would submit to Treasury. And due to the fact that the two departments did not discuss the matter before withholding of the equitable share, there were some municipalities that were not supposed to have been affected due to some other issues that I will allude to. One is that the equitable share of these municipalities has got nothing to do with the water and the electricity, so the equitable share for water and sanitation goes to the district. The second challenge that popped up left was a situation where the equitable share for a municipality was with theirs, but the challenge is that the municipality needs the national and the provincial government's attention. And there are also situations where municipal debt arose due to confusions of powers and functions matters. And the point in case here is the Dr. Ruth Mopati district, which is the water services authority that has entered into an agreement with the local municipality. Now, if you are withholding for the local municipalities that are not having that authority, then it becomes a challenge. The other issue which we felt that might really have impacted on the slow pace in which some of the municipalities responded to the letter of Treasury was that at the same time that you were withholding the equitable share, from our side we were transferring the MIG, which might mean that the municipalities might use the municipal infrastructure grant to pay for operational expenses of these municipalities that we're not receiving this. It's not something that we are saying might have happened, we are just saying it might have happened that way. That's why the response might have been slow. We are also saying the intervention is also ensuring that municipalities who attend to the basics that are not in place to ensure cost recovery and accountability regarding the revenue for the provision of services. And as stated above, the meeting with municipalities calls for national and provincial government to urgently attend to service delivery failures that are caused by policy issues that are not attended to. Now, besides the engagement that Treasury had with the municipalities that were owing, COCTA, Treasury, ESCOM, NERSA, Department of Energy, we engaged with certain municipalities last year when ESCOM had issued an intention to cut municipalities. And what we observed is summarized in the slides that are following, the two slides that are following. One of the observations was that the tariffs being charged by municipalities are not the same across the different municipalities, whereas all licensed municipalities have been charged the same tariff by ESCOM. Chair, I want to draw the committee to the fact that you find that in one particular municipal area, you might find ESCOM providing and also the municipality having the license to regulate, and the tariffs are different. And some municipalities are charging a lower tariff for the supply of electricity than what they are being charged by ESCOM, ever placing themselves up for the accrual debt. In this particular case, generally, you will find that when the tariff is increased, the NERSA will say, we are giving ESCOM 8% for the bulk tariff. But then, municipalities are given 7.39% as a threshold. But it is not actually the 7.39% that will be given to those municipalities. But even if we were saying the 7.39% would be given to these municipalities when they apply for the license or when they are submitting for the tariff increases, you might find some municipalities are given less than 7.39%. And still, you see the disparity in that regard. The other area is we have seen that some of the municipalities have inefficient billing systems where in some instances billing is based on the average rate of consumption of electricity and not on the actual one. And in other areas, we observe that the electricity supply infrastructure, such as transformers and meters in some instances, are so old that they require replacement. The other observation was that the submission of information to NERSA for purposes of tariff applications, some of this information is not reliable. If it is reliable, it might be submitted late, that the NERSA is not necessarily going to consider that. The other observation is that some of the municipalities resort to the use of equitable share transfers to pay for electricity bulk purchases to ESCOM. And this is very problematic, since the equitable share is meant to deal with the poor households, but other households to be paying for the services themselves. We also observed that some municipalities that are using the untempered prepaid meter are able to collect CD revenue as compared to those municipalities that are using the conventional meters. We also observed that there are certain consumers in these municipalities that are paying for electricity regularly at the tariff B charge. However, due to the fact that municipalities were not passing the payments to ESCOM, these consumers may be unfairly affected when ESCOM implements the cut-off. And one of the observations with regard to the water boards was that the agreements on the issue of water boards were very vague and not necessarily specific as to what they needed to look at. Now, this observation, then we aggregated the observation and said there are 5 or 7 challenges that municipalities are facing. First is the persistent non-compliance with electricity license condition. The second is the non-availability of electricity asset data. The third is the critical skills in the sector, issues around accidents and the electrical engineers, because perhaps in the last 11 or up to 15 years, we have been emphasizing more on the engineering skills, focusing on the water supply and the other civil engineering activities, and might have neglected the electricity business in that regard. And fourth is the issue of non-revenue electricity, which is caused by electricity theft, as well as the issues of cable theft that has been reported in quite a number of areas. The most important one is the revenue from electricity sales not ring-fenced for the sustainability of the supply. In quite a number of these municipalities, we realize that the electricity revenue is not necessarily ring-fenced to deal with matters related to electricity. You might find that in other instances where you are getting more revenue from electricity, it is used to cross-subsidize other functions of the municipality. And the other challenge is municipalities not implementing the tariffs approved by the regulator. And lastly, that the tariffs are not structured to reflect the cost of providing that particular service. Now, we also then looked at the issue of the role of NERSA versus municipalities in the electricity tariff determination. We observed that NERSA issued a guideline for municipal tariffs which requires municipalities to submit the form to them by the 30th of October. And this prescribed deadline are some of the deadlines that some of the municipalities that are licensed to articulate do not prescribe to. And we also learned that NERSA annually communicates a guide price increase to municipal distributors. with the average benchmark, which allows for 70% of the bulk and some form of renewable energy losses, salary and wages, 10%. All these factors are factors that need to be looked at within the ring-fence business of electricity. Now, in terms of the process that is involved, is that a council will approve the annual budget of a municipality, which will include all the municipal tariff increases. I think towards the end of this month, when municipalities will be adopting their budgets, they will also be indicating what will be the increase in the electricity, water, sanitation, refuse removal, and all other tariffs. But in this regard, municipalities may not impose a tariff that is not approved by NERSA. So it is important, as we speak now, that all municipalities, especially on the energy side, on the electricity side, should have obtained the necessary approval in terms of how much they can increase their tariff. Some of the factors that NERSA looks at, if say you could allow, is that they also look at whether a municipality is having losses that are beyond, because certain municipalities were having losses that were more than 40%. And in that regard, you will find that NERSA, instead of giving you the 7.39%, then they will give you a lesser percentage. There was one municipality where they gave 5.1% instead of 7.39%. And our view was that that municipality will never break even in terms of paying Eskom debt when Eskom in the bulk supply they have given 8%. Now there are actions that we thought were a mandate. One was the issue that is in municipalities themselves, just to deal with issues of electricity losses, technical and non-technical, as well as the issues of cable theft. I think if you have been following this issue around around last year, I think the city power took action against those people who were involved in the cable theft. The second issue, which we thought is an immediate action, is to reduce the municipal debt to Eskom for the bulk electricity supply. And our view was that this action by Treasury was also meant to deal with that particular issue. And the third was the issue of managing the demand management side of the electricity provision. Issues of looking at using the correct bulb in buildings, issues of retrofitting, and all the other measures that have been communicated by both municipalities as well as Eskom. It is also linked to issues of promotion of the energy efficiency and the issue of implementing the prepaid meters in the place of conventional meters, which might be met with some form of opposition from consumers. You might have heard the past week until this week with the issue of Eskom and the Soweto residents. The other issue is around the reskilling of the electricity units in municipalities, the ring-fencing of the electricity business where it is not ring-fenced, and the setting of cost-reflective tariffs, which should reflect the cost drivers like your bulk purchases, your refurbishment cost, your operational cost, and the issue of management of notified maximum demand, which is your reserve capacity. In this particular case, we are saying, if you are a municipality that is managing your electricity business and you have been given a reserve capacity that you are not utilizing for 3 months for one reason or another, why should you be keeping that? Because you are also paying penalties for the availability of that notified maximum demand. And in the event that you go beyond your allocation and you go into the reserve capacity, ESCOM gives penalties for the holding. So that in itself is problematic. The other issue is the regular inspection of the network and monitoring the license conditions effectively by NERSA. And lastly, issues of submitting reliable information to NERSA when applying for tariffs. The last slide, Chair, is more a slide that the President will talk to in terms of the action that they have taken and the meetings that they have had with around 59, some of the 59 municipalities. Up to today, how much has been paid? By the time we concluded the presentation, we were around 20, and now 26 have already been paid, but I think they will talk more on that. Chair, we just recommend the committee to note these points and also perhaps get guidance from the committee in terms of some of the policy issues that we have raised, because we are engaging with the relevant stakeholders in terms of those policy matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, that concludes the presentation from our side. We hope that the Treasurer will be given an opportunity to expand on matters that fall peculiarly within their knowledge. But perhaps what I can add from my side is that matters relating to the government, which I alluded to earlier, have already been presented to the Forum of Directors General Management Committee, and that a cabinet memorandum is being prepared, which is going to call for national and provincial departments that are owing municipalities, in respect of which there is a conversation on the accuracy or otherwise of the bills or the invoices, that the principle of pay now and complain later must be invoked to the extent that government departments must be required to pay at least 80% of the invoice amount, with the understanding that once the verification of the validity of the bill is going to be over or under, that those matters can then be resolved in the forthcoming period. So there is support from the Forum of Directors General to go that route. And once that matter has been tabled before cabinet, we will be able to share with the committee what the next steps are going to be once cabinet has reflected on that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Maybe we should invite the Treasurer, who is present.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, you noticed that our presentations are almost exactly the same. However, we would then elaborate more on the observations that we from outside and the progress today. So my colleague will then present on the observation and I'll then control the progress today from that.
Thank you, President. Morning, Honorable Members. Part of the intention of this process is to allow municipalities the opportunity to make the presentation and to establish the root cause of persistent non-payment of creditors, and in particular, service delivery creditors, with a particular focus on the water board and ESCOM. And at the end of this process, National Treasury will compile a comprehensive diagnostic report for Minister of Finance, who will then make a recommendation on the way forward. And this will be informed by some of the observations that we have made that far through this process. And that's why the engagement that we've had within the municipalities that we engage with have involved the National Treasury, as well as the provincial department, COGSA, the provincial treasury, SALDA, as well as COGSA. So just in terms of the areas that we believe will need to be addressed, broadly these are of institutional and governance nature. We also think in terms of relating to the management an operating environment for municipalities, and we also see challenges relating to the policy and the regulatory environment in which they operate. In terms of the institutional and governance challenges, we know from the meetings that we've had that poor leadership and weak financial management have led to mismanagement of finances, which in turn has allowed the debt to escalate. And so we see several municipalities who owe over 500 million, over half a billion, to the Eskom or the supplying water board. There's one municipality in particular who's combined debt to Eskom and a supplying water board is almost 2 billion rand. And that to us suggests that the Eskom leadership and poor financial mismanagement in those municipalities. We also have observed that there are weak institutional arrangements between the six municipalities and local municipalities. I think this one was also highlighted earlier by a colleague from COGSA. This is in relation to power enhancing between district and local municipalities. And this has resulted in a multitude of fragmented and ineffective institutional arrangements, particularly between water services authorities and water service providers. And this suggests that a review of the powers and functions between districts and local municipalities may be necessary, and it's also important that COPS and the Department of Water and Sanitation take the lead in that process. A further concern that we have is that there's an apparent pattern in which the water component of the equitable share is not transferred by some district municipalities to our water services authority to the local municipalities that are appointed as water services providers. This is despite the fact that these water services providers may be performing the full water services in those areas. And this in itself has also contributed to an escalation of the debt, as well as the disputes generally around the responsibility for settling invoices and the responsibility for the management of assets.
Apologies. We are now on slide number 20 of our conference submission. Just follow.
Okay. In terms of ownership of assets, there also appears to be instances where the ownership of assets, and this is particularly the case with water infrastructure, where it is unclear where this sits between the Department of Water and Sanitation, district municipalities and local municipalities, and in some instances with water boards. And as a result, some water boards operating infrastructure whose ownership is unclear, and that results in issues over the responsibility for the management of the assets. And again, this is something that we'll need to be addressed going forward, and in particular the Department of Water and Sanitation will have to take a lead. In terms of management and operation, we've noted that weak tariff-setting in the municipalities has also contributed to tariffs being set that are not really cost-effective. I think this has been highlighted earlier. There's generally poor revenue management, which has meant that payments are due to creditors far exceed the revenue that is collected, and this is even when taking into account the equitable share transfers to a municipality. There's also an absence of service level agreements between municipalities and their health services providers, both Eskom and water boards. In spite of this being a requirement in terms of the Structures Act. We've also found that past repayment agreements that have been entered into by municipalities were not affordable and realistic, and in many cases were signed merely for compliance. And many of the municipalities have signed several agreements going back several years, which have not been funded, and they have not been adhered to. Generative trust resulted in the accumulation of debt. In terms of electricity losses and water losses, I think the point can't be emphasized enough. in some municipalities that we've met with, we've seen losses of up to 60% for water and electricity affected. And this is driven both by physical losses or technical losses, which suggests insufficient attention and investment in maintenance and the management of assets. But these losses are also in part due to billing and metering inaccuracies, non-collection, as well as theft. The levels of electricity theft are particularly high in some municipalities, and there appears to be a need to move to smart metering or some form of metering where those meters can't be breached. However, the challenge for municipalities is also that will require significant capital outlay on their part. One of the things that concerned us is several municipalities also simply don't meter the water that is provided to many of the households in their community. And, you know, ultimately this equates then to millions of rands in revenue which the municipalities are not collecting. We note high operating costs, and in particular above normal staff costs, which in turn then means that budgets are not funded. Just again on the point about tariffing, you see that the tariff increased by municipalities are not cost reflective, and they're not in line with their own rising costs and the cost of our purchases of electricity and water. You also see that the municipalities which could benefit from making use of sliding block tariffs, which would assist in demand management. And then from the Section 71 report which the municipality submits to the Treasury on a monthly basis, as well as from the annual financial statements, we look at municipalities are found to be overstating their debt figures and understating their credit figures. And their creditor amounts far exceed the equitable share of these municipalities. And then, in terms of the policy and regulatory environment or challenges, and again, these are areas that we believe will need to be addressed by national treasuries and municipalities and COP as well as other stakeholders. We find that municipalities who don't hold the distribution license in their service areas, and this has also had a negative effect and have hampered their ability to implement credit control for their other trading services, and in turn has also been affected their revenue collection. In the water sector, one of the challenges that there appears to be is there's no independent economic regulator. So where there are disputes over a tariff that may be set either by the Department of Water and Sanitation itself or a water board, there isn't an independent review mechanism which an aggrieved party can resort to and which can preside and rule over these disputes. And in some of these instances, the Department of Water and Sanitation, which sets the raw water tariff, is itself a party to the dispute, and yet under the current arrangement, effectively is the regulator of the dispute. There is an MSMA process through which the National Treasury can mediate disputes between organs of state. However, it's apparent from these engagements that we have with municipalities that the water sector could benefit from a similar scenario where there is independent oversight of tariff setting across the water sector value chain. And then, broadly, there's some concerns that we have, and I believe COGS has shared some concerns and have kept on a view around some of the practices that ESCOM is using. And these will be discussed at the conclusion of this project. As Mr. Lee pointed out, these largely relate to billing. So ESCOM's requirements that accounts are settled within 15 days, this is not in line with the 30-day payment rule which is was stipulated in the SMA. And as a result of the 50 days, and the account becomes due, and the business must take any thus accumulating accruing interest. And we've also observed that in most instances, municipalities, with their own customers, so with their billing to households, they allow up to 60 days before an account is due. And this billing mismatch between ESCOM billing and the municipality's billing has also contributed to the accumulation of arrears, particularly for municipalities which don't have the liquidity and can't before their accounts with ESCOM up front. I think specifically we also touched on the matter of the interest rate which is charged by ESCOM, which we also agree probably needs to be reviewed with ESCOM as a price of 5% daily, etc. It's also important to highlight that public entities, in terms of the CFMA, are required to charge interest on accounts that are overdue. And the accounting authorities have a responsibility to take all the necessary steps in order to collect the revenue which is due to them. However, as I mentioned earlier, I think that in this particular instance, we may need to review the excessive charge by ESCOM. Similarly, the issue of the nominated maximum demand and penalties which are charged to municipalities. This is an area that will also be taken up by ESCOM. At the same time, when municipalities are incurring additional charges for exceeding their nominated maximum demand, that also suggests that there's inadequate planning or, and demand management in the municipality. And that is also an area that needs to be addressed going forward. This is the challenge of municipalities not being able to implement credit control where they are not the license holder. Further challenge is the fact that we ESCOM is a direct supplier to households. We also find that ESCOM charges a particular rate for their customers while municipalities adopt a different rate for their customers, which either suggests that municipalities are under recovering or ESCOM is overcharging. And again, further work is required in this regard. And then lastly, we were also concerned by ESCOM's reluctance to negotiate more practical repayment periods for arrears with municipalities. And I think given that many of the municipalities have not at this stage included the repayment of arrears in their budget, and with municipalities whose arrears are over half a billion, the reality is that some of those debts cannot be repaid in under 12 months as ESCOM seems to expect. Although I think as part of this process and the repayment agreements that have been negotiated, ESCOM has relaxed its stance somewhat and allowed agreeable to longer repayment periods. But going forward, we need to ensure that repayment agreements are obviously negotiated in the interest of both parties. So I think just to conclude, I think it is clear that the debt is symptomatic of a larger set of problems which will need to be addressed at various levels in government. And as mentioned earlier, these observations and these findings will be summarized and the Minister of Finance will then make a recommendation on the way forward together with his counterpart after working foundation as well as including the interest of other stakeholders.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Maybe we should invite number two for that. And then Sarka will come in. Every discussion with Sarka. Madam, you want to make a point?
Jefferson Temple.
Different point.
Jefferson, and I'm going to address this generally, and maybe the relevant people can respond to them as they pick up that it applies to their department. Jefferson, at the outset, I want to reiterate again that I am concerned that the ministers are not here when we're talking about 4.5 billion rand worth of of revenue that is outstanding to ESCOM that is owed by municipalities. I am concerned that the Minister of Finance is not here when we're taking such drastic actions against municipalities. I'm also concerned that ESCOM are not here when the challenges that have been highlighted by National Treasury, particularly in terms of ESCOM's reluctance to come to the party on some of these issues. I would think that they should be here as well as part of this discussion. Chairperson, I am very pleased to see that COGSA has heeded the DA's call to ring-fence electricity revenue for the purposes of paying the ESCOM bill and maintenance and upgrade of electricity infrastructure. You will recall that I have raised this several times in the past, and I'm very pleased to see that it is now part of their immediate action. Chairperson, the questions that I want to ask are as follows. First of all, why are we prioritizing select creditors? Why are we doing this on behalf of ESCOM and the water? What about the other creditors? Why does it have to be an issue just for ESCOM and the water? Second question related to this is the National Treasury then acting as a credit collector for ESCOM and the water? And if so, why? Then the next question is, why did the National Treasury go straight to Section 216? My concern here, this is more a question to COGSA, is that the Financial and Fiscal Commission rightly points out that the more appropriate action in this regard would be a Section 1391 or a Section 154 intervention by COGSA before a Section 216 intervention is implemented. But we note that of the 60 odd municipalities are identified for equitable share capital, only 13 have been placed under administration at any point ever. So what steps have been taken to rectify these problems before? Then the FSC also raises the question of when a municipality is under administration, under Section 139(1)(b) administration. Effectively, the administrator is appointed by the province. And who is then responsible for the payment? Who is responsible for the non-payment within 3 days? And who should be held accountable? Is it right that the municipality gets held accountable when the province actually has the controlling strings at that point? There are, I think it's 6 municipalities that are in that situation right now that are on this list. Why was the intergovernmental fiscal relations framework ignored? There are mechanisms in place to address this kind of issue and prevent the draconian step that has been taken here. I note that in both presentations, mention is made of the amount that are owed by national and provincial departments, and in this case, the worst payers are the Departments of Health, the Department of Education, and the Department of Public Works, literally across the board, every province. What steps have been taken against them? Are they being cut off? Are their grants being withheld? Just on some of the slides in particular, I want to talk to slide 16 on the... Sorry, let's start with slide 7 and 8. Of COGSA's presentation, the age analysis of arrear debt. This is the debt owed to ESCOM by municipalities, and if you have a look at the figures along the bottom, the total arrear debt is $4.487303 billion. We then go to the next page, and it says debt owed by the top 20 municipalities to ESCOM is $4.487303. No other municipalities are mentioned. Why are they not included in the total debt owed by ESCOM, or by municipalities to ESCOM? Do only these 20 municipalities owe to ESCOM? It appears not, because it's the top 20. And yet the page says this is what's owed by all the municipalities in the province. And the same goes on the water, the debt of the water board. So what is the correct figure here? Do we even know? On slide 16 in COGSA's presentation, I'm very concerned about bullet point 2, that National Treasury withheld funds to municipalities that were not supposed to be affected. What has been done to rectify? Has that tranche now been released? Why were they identified in the first place, and why was no discussion before those monies were withheld? On slide 18, bullet 2, it says some municipalities are charging a low tariff for the supply of electricity than what they're being charged by ESCOM, thereby setting themselves up for the accrual of debt. Well, this is just stupid. This is absolutely ridiculous. And why has it not been identified before? What steps have been taken with NERSA to rectify the challenge of equalizing or aligning the tariffs charged by the municipalities with the costs incurred by them? And I recognize here that the tariff charged by a municipality has to be higher than the cost charged from ESCOM, because they are responsible for the infrastructure and the articulation. But my concern is this. Firstly, why are municipalities not applying to NERSA for a higher increase than the guidelines, whatever it may be in a particular year? They have that ability. They can apply directly to NERSA and say, listen, this is not affordable. That's the first thing. And secondly, why is NERSA issuing a percentage increase as opposed to a tariff increase or setting a tariff for a particular municipality? Let's say City of Cape Town, the cost of electricity from ESCOM is 80 cents. It's going to cost them another 20 cents for reticulation. Let's take a rand. If that costs another 20 cents for other costs, that's 1.20 rand. And NERSA would then say the tariff for City of Cape Town is 1.20 rand. I'm just using this as an example. These figures are completely stuck out of my stuff. And so on for all the municipalities, because different municipalities have got different costs. You can't say that the costs in Marsha Bank are the same as the costs of the City of Johannesburg, because the reticulation costs are so much more expensive in one compared to the other. Then what is 3? All 4 municipalities have inefficient billing systems. Which 4 municipalities are we referring to there? There's no reference to what you're talking about. The following slide, bullet point 6, says some municipalities resort to the use of equitable share transfers to pay for electricity bulk purchases from ESCOM. This is problematic since equitable share is meant to deal with poorer households, while other households should be paid for the services. I don't dispute that equitable share is meant to cover the cost of supplying free basic services to indigent households. Not at all. But surely, the cost of supply includes bulk purchases. So that bullet point there is ridiculous. It's not problematic at all. It's exactly what it's meant to be used for. On slide 10, just with regard to the immediate actions, I'm very pleased to see that there is a number of steps that have been taken. Most of them seem to be reasonable. Can we get some idea of the time frames to bring the remaining municipalities, the ones that have not complied with the requirements of the National Treasury today, to bring them in line and get their fund released? I think the concern here is that the withholding of equitable share has an immediate impact on the ability of those municipalities to provide services. So you're saying on the one hand, hey, ESCOM, but you're going to withhold your money so you can't do what you're supposed to do anyway. So now those municipalities have to go and scrap around in other areas, as was indicated, possibly take the money from their MET grant to pay for the bulk services to ESCOM. So can we get some idea of what progress has been made with the other municipalities, the ones that have not had their funds released, and when it is anticipated that that will be completed? Thank you, Chair.
I think Madam has already understood those names, but Madam, we are here for 4 or 5 years, 4 years to go.
How often have you seen
it? We still have to see them around.
Thank you very much, Chair, for my colleagues, for the guest. My apologies, Chair, for being late. I was at the dock and I assumed I'd be here by the time we started. I only have 4 questions. No, Duba went when you could not get 50 plus 1, so, you know.
that bond out rather badly, but that's a very other page. No, Chair, I'm quite concerned about the issue of ESCOM because at a date or two, last year I posed the question to the minister and the response was that, I mean, the debt level was just extremely high. So I'm glad that there are now interventions in place because in essence what happens is that when there's this vicious cycle of debt to the consumer, the ordinary man in the street, struggling about that on a daily basis, we have to pay the brutal brunt of this management of managing the debt. I would just want to find out, there was an issue on slide 20 with reference to skill development. Now, imagine that when we've got a high unemployment rate in South Africa, in fact, it's been an unemployment crisis, it should really speak to sanity that we need to prioritize the issue of artisans and so on to, you know, to deal with this issue. So what is being done to actually have the necessary skills available to ensure that the machinery continues to run without a glitch? Because that on its own is part of the problem if it remains unresolved. So, you know, there is a feature. What communication is taking place between the various departments around this area of skill development and whether those audits have been done in order to assess where is it that we need the skills, has it been done to fill those vacancies. So to speak about it in bold terms, to say, oh, there's a skills shortage and so on, really, we've been diagnosing these problems now since for a very long time. So let's actually get now down to the specifics of the skills audit being done and what actions are being taken to actually address that issue. Okay, what comes up as a recurring issue is the issue of the relationship between district and local municipality. And I think we need to actually arrive one day at actually addressing that question, just not specifically to this issue, because it's across the board. There's a conflict, there's a territorial war, there's a powers and functions headache, the list is endless of districts and locals. So once you, but now specifically here, how is that being assisted to ensure that then there is at least an easy flow of communication and understanding who's who in the zoo and who does what, to actually try and deal with this relationship between districts and local territories. Then of course there's the persistent problem of borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, which is really a major issue. And I think that we do need to arrive at a logical conclusion in terms of how we're actually going to curb this financial anomaly taking place, because it is a problem. And if it remains unaddressed, as far as I see it, it remains, it will escalate the problem further. Chair, finally, it's a pity that ESCOM is not here, but I want to find out, because it does seem to have been an interaction. What was ESCOM's rationale behind their 15-day collection period? Because I'm in agreement with the fact that it is in contradiction to MSMA and so on. Of course, what reasons were advanced to the relevant stakeholders on this 50-day collection period? Because I would want on one hand to say, whilst I agree that it's a contradiction, the bigger question really is, are actually municipalities even complying with a 30-day collection period? Because we can come here and jump off the rooftops, following that with a 15-day rule is unfair, and move them to the 30-day and so on. But even there, to find that it just still remains an issue of capacity and that it is a problem of process. So while we want to be in agreement that yes, let's arrive at the 30-day payment schedule, but is the capacity there, generally speaking, in municipalities? Because small businesses are complaining about municipalities failing to meet and they are taking their care. So I imagine that we need to deal with these two issues simultaneously. Finally, Chair, the issue of
provincial department and national department totally undermining municipalities is an issue. But I don't think it would be fair for us to just blast municipalities. What the tendency now is that everybody just seems to think that municipalities are a second-class government, and therefore they must bear up, you know, the big brother ramifications of that. Well, we, you know, that movie Matilda, the transfer comes in and says to the kids, I'm right, you wrong, I'm big, you small, nothing you can do about it. That is what is happening to municipalities. And I think somebody, and it must be this committee, must stand up in defense of the municipalities against provincial and national departments, so that we don't, their problems are not compounded by other departments, which are institutions of state, which are undermining them. So that we can judge municipalities on whether they have actually performed or not performed on the basis that they are on an equal and level footing with other institutions of government. But this can't go on in so many situations. And I think we have to have a report. We wrote a book that was important. Thank you.
My concern is that among the factors mentioned here, everything negative to municipalities, I don't see here corruption being among the factors. Particularly given the fact that at the recent Kanaka summit in Joburg, the minister alluded to his sanctity when he was confronted by Mr. Rosenthal, accusing him of colliding with Salga regarding their concerns. He said that don't actually regard me as someone to connive because I'm not a conniver. And secondly, you are stealing as a municipality. You are looting away a municipality. So I thought that in the presentation here, it also corruption also features as a factor that actually disables municipality to deliver on their mandate. It perhaps is such a an area that the department is so dreadful that the department is even unable to venture into it, let alone mentioning it here. It is such a dreadful area for you as a department. But for as long as corruption is rampant in this municipality, surely we're going nowhere. And it is the fact that it's also infecting on this, but why is it not brought forward here? Say corruption is among the factors that are actually contributing to this state government. That is my concern. If the minister was here, we'd actually be asking directly the question, but he has been asked.
Honorable
Minister,
thank you for
is there any way where we can also get a breakdown of municipalities of business? Yes. Because here the presentation mostly focuses on the household, but we also know that business are also owing a lot of money. And we heard that some of the business are also charged sometimes far less than what is charged to the household. Is there any way that we can get such information? Two, ESCOM has been in the media for some time saying that in one way to address this problem is for them to go direct and supply electricity to the household. How true is it? Maybe is there any scientific research that has been done, conducted, that can prove what they are saying? Because they've been saying this thing, shouting it in the media as well, that they wanted to provide electricity direct. In some of the observations, particularly slide 18, I don't know how this municipality, maybe when you were doing the observation, particularly those that were charging that, how are they surviving? What are they substituting this in your research? What were they using? Is it the same similar issue where they borrow from Peter Tupol that the Honorable Chairman has raised? if that's the case, how are we thinking, what do you have in mind that we can address such problems? Because it is a major problem to me that these issues are one of some of the issues that need to be addressed. And also how deep it is, this issue of municipality where they just use particularly they use the grant or the equity share, they just convert it to pay for the facility. How deep it is. We have so many, more than 50% of those municipalities that have been mentioned here using the similar system, or it's just only those few, so that we know how deep the problem is. And lastly, Chair, let me end there, Chair. The others have already been asked. Thank you.
Chairperson,
yes.
You can sit here and lament on this issue. When after the change to us, poor leadership and poor financial management, we can sit here and take decisions. As long as those things are still, we will never cross this rubric. But that is also saying poor means there is non-existence of leadership. School doesn't promise to improve school. We can sit here and come with suggestions. As long as we don't take a political decision with the minister or the two ministers, we will sit here. Because the implementers there, they are not there in Manishari. Councillors are policy makers, and administration must implement it. So if administration is poor, you can take whatever policy decision, but your policy decision will never be implemented. And to say that there is no coordination between departments, among service providers. If Eskom, part of the world are supplied by Eskom and part of the world are supplied by municipalities, and there is no communication in terms of determination of territory, we are still going to get our people to engage on the internet. This is what exactly is happening in Orlando. The other day, I was listening to Power FM, the MNC for Infrastructure, in Sequel. Taking each other in public place is ESCO. So we are not building any confidence in our community, the people whom we are supposed to serve. So I'm of the view that we will ask our officials questions here, but if we don't take a political decision with the minister, so how are we going to eradicate this poor leadership in municipalities, to take out these things? Because they are politically appointed. They are politically appointed. They are not appointed. They are politically deployed. So our officials tend to be politicians. They are no longer administrators. They are now protecting their territory. So if we don't tell the minister that our top officials are sent from Treasury and from COPTA, they are paying poor leadership in municipality. What are we doing as a portfolio committee and the minister? What are we doing? Because if our top leader comes here and tells us poor leadership, and there is no way here where intervention is made to maybe to eradicate this school leadership at that level of the municipality. We are going to leave this, go back, but those people will be unable to implement whatever we are taking here because they don't have leadership skills or they are incapacitated to take decisions. Yes.
Thank you, Beth. I think it's really wrong sometimes to politicize some of these issues because somewhere the leadership has been shown. Like, for instance, the new contract that the department is working with, the Back to Basics, that is trying to bridge all the gaps. But at the very same time, we do not say there are no challenges or rather there are no loopholes. The issue here, because my colleagues have covered me in many questions from Honorable Malham, this issue of communication, seemingly there's a communication gap. Because somewhere you said the reports that I think it was Bishop Treasurer. The reports maybe from the municipality sometimes are inaccurate and they leave much to be desired in a way. But when do you pick this up and when do you start to act? Because somewhere it says to me the decision that you came up with is rather harsh and punitive. And to me it says you should have been there because when you're working together, there will be indication that this is the red light. And how do we best deal with? Or maybe because ESCOM has, like in the media, pronounced itself that it will be shutting its electricity. Did you act because of the threat, maybe from the from ESCOM, or were you going along with the municipalities into how do we best deal with this issue of your own to ESCOM? Because I understand, because at the end of the day, we're also citizens, and we'll be called to meetings, we'll be addressed. Sometimes the like your debt collection policies will be presented to us as a community. And sometimes I think that municipalities are not empowered that much in terms of being able to collect. Like, for instance, if I can compare with me, SARS is able to go to whoever if that person has some debts to serve. But with municipalities, it's not easy. Too many people are owing municipalities, and they like don't have that power. They do whatever that is necessary, like your debt collection policy. They will present it to communities. Communities will be aware, will know what is it that is expected from them. But it's not easy. Even like your retailer's store, it's easy. They can someone. But with municipalities, it doesn't happen like that. I think I will end there.
I don't know if from time you cover that, but so they mean to be able to use the
question you have a phone. If they have more questions,
honorable, you have more things, you can say, Matalaki, you have a direct to Matalaki. Now, what was shaken from that call? On ESCOM, we must find a separate and gold one. I know my answer. If there is a problem, ESCOM collects all day. It is over here. If there is no problem, we ESCOM collects. How is it going to be that the local challenges? Why does it must find a separate and gold one? The second issue is the president. On slide number 7, on page 2, page to the ground. Then you must find the provincial collection. What about the comment? If it says, no friends to come back. My line of line number 7 is 4. If you want to start Western Key, you call that Chelsea is like a part of the Potomac, 250 years. And what you come over to more electoral right out here? But I'm a life. Never said about what.
Okay, the department and the secretary officer who can come in, show his data as the computer. Also, when you make a presentation, it will touch on some of the areas that have been raised.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. This one is a very tough one, because the issue around the ring fencing, whether it's from our perspective, we're saying it's a legal issue. The Systems Act provides that a municipality can run its services through creating a business unit or a department. So we are saying, as it relates to electricity, you can have the business unit that deals with the issue of electricity. The issue of slide 8. Why we have not included, I can't remember the question. Let me start with the last one from Honorable Mdao. The issue of slide 7, where we are indicating the current debt of Western Caving around 734 million, and that of Gauteng being 1.7 billion. That is the current. In fact, we don't regard that as area debt. It is debt that they are able to service. If you look at the last, that I was concentrating on the last column, because the last column just indicates what is in areas, because between 0 and 30 days, it's still within the provision of the Systems Act. So that is debt that is still serviceable. So that is the reason why we have that. I'll still have to come back to slide 8. Let me go to issue of slide 18, where we have indicated that all four. I think that is just a misprint, because when we started with the process of engaging, we started engaging some four municipalities. So when we were updating the presentation, we forgot the four remains. The other issue of why municipalities are not applying for a higher tariff from NERSA. Indeed, Honorable Milan, that the municipalities are allowed to apply for a tariff that is higher than the threshold. But then NERSA will have to engage these municipalities using other factors that are referred to in terms of whether the bulk cost will be 70%, whether the issue of operational cost will be 10%, and all those other matters. But on top of that, they look at how the municipality has been performing in relation to the losses and the other factors. Now, if a municipality has had losses that are very high, they will not want to give the municipality a tariff that they are applying, because they are saying you are overcharging your customers that are currently paying to subsidize those that are not paying. So that is an issue that really happens between the NERSA and the municipality. Like I said in the presentation, that some of these applications from municipalities do not necessarily reflect the cost of providing that particular service. So NERSA is unable to really determine what are other factors that they should be considering when they deal with the matter. The issue that you identified on slide 19, I think it was more an issue of English. You are right, because municipalities are supposed to use the equitable share to service their bulk infrastructure. However, what we wanted to say is just to say, when you have the equitable share, ideally you should be servicing the bulk infrastructure relating to those households that are poor, because we are saying those that are able to pay should be able to pay. So the issue of your revenue collection methodologies should be looked at. There's a question that you asked around who is responsible for payments, especially in instances where a municipality is under Section 139. There is if a municipality is under Section 139, there should be an accounting officer. And this, I'm just saying it's a guidance here, because this is just my opinion and not necessarily an issue that I may say I know about it. You will have an accounting officer even when you have 139. And that accounting officer has the fiduciary responsibility to pay for any creditor. So that's my view. The other question was, why are we really looking at Eskom and the water board? What about other creditors of municipalities? The question that you're raising might be to ask me when he was on leave, when somebody phoned him. And I said, DG, an agreement between a service provider and a municipality should be an agreement between them, and they should be able to engage each other through other mechanisms. Now, we are coming into the issue of water boards and Eskom, because Eskom cannot go to the court without dealing with the matter of negotiations internally. Those are the provisions of the Intergovernmental Framework Act, which says public institutions cannot go to the court to solve matters that are relating to any dispute that they have. So that is the reason why, as government, we are focusing on the on the water boards and the Eskom. I might have left some. I think the DG will take some view on the issue, Honourable Klemo, on the issue of why are we not prioritizing artisan, and what are we doing in order to prioritize for electrical artisan. We have already started through the program of MISA, but it's only that we were focusing more on the water artisans rather than the energy artisans. And I'm sure with the new issues that are emerging, MISA will be able to prioritize those particular skills. The issue of the relationship between districts and locals, I think that is an issue of powers and function, which we are elevating to a policy aspect, to say how do you deal with the issue of the authority role and the provider role between the two. And that matter is a matter that we are putting in the agenda for policy review. The rationale of Eskom's 15-day collection period, I think Treasury will have to may assist with this one. The other question was whether municipalities are really complying with the 30 days period, the payment period. And if you look at slide 7, for instance, if you look at the current, which is 29 days, you see 4.9 billion. But if you look at 30 days up to 300 and something million, it therefore indicates that municipalities are adhering to some of the calls that has been made. Quite a number of these municipalities are really servicing their current debt, because that is really current. So our view is that the issue of area debt might be influenced by those factors that we have talked about in terms of your notified maximum demand and reserve capacity issue. So they are currently doing that. I think I should go back to the other question that Honorable Milliam has asked as to whether these are the only 20 municipalities. I think in the annex we have put in a mixture of all the other municipalities that are going besides the top 20. We just provide it at the end as an extra. Honorable Mtetwa, no, before Honorable Mtetwa, there was a question on why is corruption not a factor. In our observation, we didn't look at the issue of corruption as a factor that affects municipalities not to pay anything. We observed quite a number of factors, but we didn't come to the issue of corruption as a factor that says municipalities are not paying Eskom because they are corrupt. So those are observations that we have indicated in the slides 18 and 19 are the observations that we have realized, especially with regard to the energy provision. Because our view that corruption might be there in municipalities across the board and not necessarily focusing on the energy side. Honorable Mteto, on the issue of business, we have not necessarily engaged on the issue of business because our view is that when municipalities use their credit control mechanisms or policies, they should be able to collect from business first and foremost. But where you're saying this municipality might be, or some of the businesses might be given lower tariffs, it might be a decision of a municipality to say, how do I incentivize this kind of investment in my area so that we continue to have employment of people. If, for instance, it's a municipality that is having a business, any particular business that is having, that is employing quite a number of people, the municipality may take that particular decision to say we are incentivizing this business by saying for this particular business the tariff will be so much. So it might be a decision of the municipality, but from our side we have not necessarily engaged with that aspect and the potential how municipalities are dealing with that. I think I will stop there and give the DP to just make a concluding remark before I allow Frederick to respond to some of them.
Thanks, Seth. Perhaps I will try and rephrase a response to an earlier question regarding why prioritize Eskom and Waterboard. I think the response is correct, but there was reference made to the intergovernmental relations framework, which was suggested that it can't go to court. It actually can go to court, but you have to exhaust internal remedies. And what we're going through are those internal remedies. Honourable Member Denham also asked about what steps are being taken against national and provincial I did allude to the fact that there's a lot of work already undertaken. There are task teams set up provincially to assist with the collection of debt owing to municipalities by national and provincial government. Between the period September 2014 and December 2014, 1.5 billion rand. Has in fact been paid to municipalities through the exercise that I've just referred to. What has complicated that situation has by and large been the fact that many of the invoices were being contested by the department. And when there is a contestation about whether or not a certain amount of money is owing due and payable, accounting officers are generally very reluctant to stick their necks out and pay for a debt that has not been verified. So what the Department of Public Works has done, working with affected departments, was to engage the services of the service provider to verify the debt owing to municipalities by way of combing through the various invoices. The first phase of the exercise is what yielded the 1.5 billion rand, which has already been paid to municipalities. The second phase is expected to be finalized sometime in September of this year. And that too should see the remainder of the debt of its municipality. In fact, it's finalized. But we've introduced a rider, as I did point out earlier on, that where there is a dispute with regard to this, even as a verification exercise is being undertaken, we would insist on national and provincial departments paying at least 80% of the debt up front, whilst the verification exercise is being undertaken. Of course, when that exercise is concluded, it will indicate whether or not there's been overpayment or underpayment. If there's been underpayment, the balance will just be settled. If there's overpayment, there's a way in which those resources could be accounted for as a credit to the relevant department for future accounts. There's a question that I believe maybe Mr. Freely and our colleagues from the Treasury are best placed to deal with, which relates to monies that may have been withheld from municipalities that are not at water services authorities or are providing electricity directly. I hope that my colleagues can still come back on that one. There was a point also raised about the need to resolve the issue of the powers and functions in relation to district municipalities and local municipalities. It's a project that we have approached on the radar. We hope that in our future engagements with the committee we will be able to give you an update as to how far we are with regards to that task. It is quite important indeed. Perhaps at this point, Chairperson, if you would permit, I would ask to try and see whether our colleagues from the Treasury are able to field specific questions related to them. And then we will come back if there are any other members of study.
Thanks, Chair, honourable members. I can answer some of the questions here that were not answered. The question around other creditors. If we were made our presentation, slide 2 talks to the issue of not only Eskom Water Board, but other creditors as a whole. And we are making a point at the bottom of slide 2 where we're saying that no payment of creditors by municipality affects the economy, and in particular, SMMEs viability. And we are also concerned, so as much as Eskom and Water Board, we are on top of the list of creditors owed by municipality. The concern is also around non-payment to smaller businesses, and we are concerned about that. The point raised about the 216, just clarify on that. No municipality has been kicked under 216 under this process. So none of the municipalities, none of the 59 municipalities are under 216. We are saying that in the event you breach on any of the agreements that we set now, it may lead to a 216 for consistent breach. The issue around slide number 8, and I think there was query around the figures of slide 8 with regards to the ESCOM municipalities. Although you have 20 municipalities there, but the last line of the slide shows you a figure that says other municipalities. So I hope that brings clarity to that slide. Water boards, slide 9, we're saying these are the water boards that all the area debt. And next page, slide 10, gives you the breakdown of the municipalities. And we have a line there to say other municipalities as well. Progress on the remaining municipalities and how we attend to that. There was a correspondence issued towards the end of last week. To provincial treasury, requesting them to assist us with municipalities that haven't met with us. We have met with 29 municipalities of the 59 to date, and 26 of those municipalities have received equitable share. However, the municipalities that we have not met with yet, we're concerned about their viability as well. And we think provincial treasuries, please help us obtain the documentation that's required to release the cable chair to these new parties. So there was a correspondence that went out towards the end of last week asking for assistance. And I must say that Telga has been very, very instrumental in assisting with getting the arrangement between ESCOM and the municipality in place. The other questions relating to government debt, I think government debt we've spoken to. There is a process for the tasking in place that will assist with the government debt payments. We are concerned that the point raised about borrow from Peter to pay Paul. We're saying that as much as the CDD has indicated that, as much as equitable charity is to take care of the poorest poor, we find that the trend is that the municipalities are revolving the credit and payment around the equitable charity tranche. And that is a concern. And many of the municipalities that we've met with today, and this can be shared with you at a later date as well, I don't have it with me. But just an indication, one municipality, the tranche that was due to them at the end of March is 129 million. The credit list is 550 million. Now bear in mind that 129 million is the last tranche to the municipality as equitable share, and that 129 million must be able to retain the municipality for 3 months up to the end of the financial year, municipal financial year. Now if the municipality has credits to the value of 550 million, then there's a huge problem that we see. And then in a number of cases we picked this up as well. We find that the credits that are owed by the municipality far exceed what the tranche of the equitable share is to the municipality.
One point I think in the department's presentation regarding municipalities that may have been erroneously affected. Municipalities who were part of the list of 59 are all municipalities which make up the top list of Waterfall and ESCOM. And there is no municipality that would have been affected in the process if it was not in the rear refusal from other water boards. I think, as we alluded to in our presentation, we have found in the process that the institutional arrangements, particularly around water supply and smooth contracts for the water board between the district municipality and the local municipality, those institutional arrangements are fairly poor and fairly lengthy. As a result, there may be there are municipalities in fact that are not necessarily the water services authority that have signed bulk supply agreements with water boards and minor areas with those water boards, and for that reason are part of the list that were affected by this process.
Just last point. The 15-day payment period that has been implemented to its customers. And I think the problem that we have there, and the policy issue that we also raised when we presented, is that on the 16th day, if the municipality does not pay on the 15th day, from the 16th day onwards, the municipality starts incurring the debt. And that's a concern to us. So that's the policy issue that we need to discuss with ESCOM.
The comment about corruption and going to be a touch on it, and he said that regionally there's nothing but speaking with the military morning yet, you find that if the water is corruption.
So it is come out, honorable member, that if you see electricity in water, it may not be regarded as the broader picture, but it is corruption ultimately. Have I missed out? I'm not sure if I missed out any points that were raised. Property rights, the cross-subsidy, I apologize, Chair. The cross-subsidy, remember, we talked about the tariff setting. And remember, the tariff setting, there's a fine line between what the community can afford to pay and what they can't. Now, if you were to just go slightly above that fine line, it will mean that your bad debt provision by the authority will have to increase. Now, and we must be very guarded about off the ship. So anything above the threshold of what the customers can pay may fall into that category of bad debt. So So we're saying that ultimately property rights is also used in certain instances to cross-subsidize some of these services. Now, in the case of ESCOM, we're saying that and this is the point, the example that the Minister of Koch has alluded to. If you were to buy the bottle of water for 10 rand, if you bought it from a bulk supplier for 10 rand, and you as business were to sell it, or you were to bill for it for 8 rand, and only collect 6 rand for that water, then you have a huge challenge. It means that you will not be sustainable in the future. And that's a simple example that goes to water services as well. Chair, I hope I covered all the issues.
Captain, just one or two more from the global member of Tessa. He asked whether we have a list of businesses that are not servicing that debt. I hope I heard the question correctly. We do not have that list, but it is certainly information we can request from municipalities. It's not information we have at hand. But definitely municipalities that are being owed by business would be able to provide that information to us. We can collate it and then make it available to the committee in due course. And there was a question raised by Honourable Member Tetra also, which is linked to the one that was asked by Honourable Member Mdao. But how true is it that where ICOM is providing assistance directly to households, that there wouldn't be a problem? And that if there's a way in which they're sophisticated, the way in which they go about doing it, why not help everybody else, including municipalities, to do the same? The Soweto example is a true revelation that despite the appetite expressed in the newspaper article that I read, that ESCOM would like to consider doing it. In the first instance, we think this is a municipal function. ESCOM would not be able to do it, as well as the fact that where they are providing the city directly, the fact they are not succeeding in collecting. So they do not have any best practice to share with municipalities in this regard. The real answer doesn't lie in ESCOM expressing the need or its desire to take over that function. But in fact, the real answer lies in us as a government, but also as a state and as a people, finding ourselves cultivating a culture of payment for citizens. Everywhere throughout the country. Of course, that is not going to be an easy challenge to overcome, but certainly one that we mustn't fail to confront. We will have to start cultivating a culture of payment. But that culture of payment is going to start with municipalities being able to provide services consistently, services that are predictable, and where there are going to be certain interruptions, that notice is provided to people in good time, that there will be a service interruption, and the reason is this, that service will be reconnected by us at the time. If the quality of the service becomes good, I believe that that's one of the ingredients required to help us cultivate the culture of payment. But we certainly would need to do more than just get municipalities to do what they're supposed to do right. It's about political commitment, and this must be a multi-party commitment. As you will be aware, I mean, there are instances where some individuals, I hesitate to say parties, I'm aware of some individuals who've gone out to campaign for elections on the ticket that if you vote for me, you will get the service free. That is part of what we would need to discuss. If need be, it's part of what we should legislate differently and make it account for disqualification for any candidate who runs on a ticket that says, if you vote for me, you will get water and electricity free. Because we know it's not the kind of service that can be given for free. But there are a host of things we certainly must do to help us cultivate that culture of faith in our community. And part of it would have to start with us at regular intervals, introspect. For an example, one of the questions would be, how many members of parliament seated around here have their electricity bill in order? You know, are we paying consistently? We need to ask ourselves, even as government officials, are we paying our bills consistently? We need to start doing that in order to cultivate that culture. But some of those who would ask the questions might well be the people who are not paying for services. So we need to introspect. No, not to say them to members of others. No. Sure. Well, it's more than just electricity bill I'm talking about. Indeed, but it's a yes, our bill for municipal services, all of them. But I wasn't really directing it to Honourable Miller. I'm just talking about everybody being committed to making sure that our municipalities function well. And part of the contribution we need to make, beyond discussing the ballot for the party you like, about us being citizens that are responsible by making sure that we pay for services that are rendered to us. And I think that's pretty much all that I have to say. I've noted the comments that have been made by honourable member on the other side about methods relating to leadership and methods of poor financial management. These are methods the best to be this program is trying to respond to. Thanks.
And I want to check about that. No. Once we take Palka, the colleagues that sit here until 1 will address the border question, because some of the issues that are raised by Palka, some of the questions that you pose yourself, I think it would be fair to take the politics of it and have a discussion in it about that. I didn't say that we are here until 1. And then, okay. I think we must invite Palka to make a presentation. Sheraton of who is making a presentation in the room.
Thank you, Chairperson. Members, yes, of course, Chair, and also our officials from the department. I will have the Deputy Chair making a presentation. But I think it will also be proper just to highlight a few matters. I assume we are here, Chairperson, simply because of the withdrawal of the equitable share. And the legal instrument to do that is the same section of the Constitution, which is section 1216. So basically, it's because of that section at the bottom. Or else there would be no any legal instrument to handle this matter. The main issue from Salga Chairperson is the issue of how we implement matters pertaining to IGI. And I think we will highlight that issue, that this matter could have been handled better if we really were digging into IGR framework. The second point is, there are municipalities that can afford to pay, and they have to pay, full stop, like all other citizens, everyone. And I think we have to stick to that. But in this country, the reality is, there are non-viable municipalities. Whether we like it or not, they would not be able. Yes, they have to cross subsidize, they have to survive. And I think we really need to look into those non-viable municipalities. The reality. Hence we are having the demarcation board to deal also with this matter. What else wouldn't be the demarcation board to deal with this matter? And three, in this regard, the slide of culture, which is slide 50, has been the bone of contention by this municipality. They also are claiming that embassies from ESCOM, they've been disputing these invoices. And you then can't have national treasury just withholding equitable share simply because invoices are under dispute. And I think that is what we, actually we should be saying, which of those municipalities have indicated that they are not happy with these invoices, and what is it that we are doing in that regard? Not the other way around that. If they all have paid, even those invoices that they are disputing, then we will come back and look into this matter. I think that approach is something that we really have to look into. If you are saying national departments must pay 80% of the invoices, and we don't have the same rule applying to municipalities, it becomes a problem. And two, MFMA sources are not rules. They basically are the law. So if the law says 30 days, that is it. No one else, whether it's come or what. And then Parliament say, no, we will then charge interest rates on a 15-day invoice and so forth. I think we have to do this. It's not a rule. It's an act. So, unless if ESCOM is having different acts that are governing it, versus these municipalities, but municipalities are compelled to pay within 30 days as per MFMA. But just to give them the committee how events unfolded, I'll request the deputy chairperson to give a quick presentation in this regard. That's enough. You will do the introduction.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Chair of the, Committee, Portfolio Committee, honorable members of, the committee, the leadership of the administration of COSTA as Commissioner President, and the administrative leadership of SARO. Just as the Chair would have indicated, that it's possible to also have to clear what happened in the Members' Assembly when the Minister spoke about corruption. Surely never said this local government is corrupt. In the plenary, there was a question raised about all spheres of government running around local government to ensure that all of us, we ensure that the going back to basics is a tool that we could have to feed government as a whole, not necessarily local government. So, and therefore the minister made issues that what can be done to ensure that we overcome some of the problems. So it might be wrong to take that the minister blanches that local government is corrupt. It has not that reflection. But Chair, I want to create a platform background of what could have happened. That what really happened is the whole issue of intergovernmental relations with the Chair of Deputies. That an email was sent by National Treasury on the Friday of the 6th of March to almost 60 municipalities, requiring them to comply with certain measures dealing with the debt of ESCOM and water works. And the next Friday, which was the 10th of February, the expectation was that if you don't comply to that date, ESCOM will then, actually National Treasury would withhold the equitable share. And we, concerning issues that the South ahead, was that there was no sense of allowing municipalities to convene council meetings and have discussions about what the 7 day deadline. And so our concern is that there would have been a better way to deal with the problem. And then SAGA wrote the letter to the minister to request that this assembly be held in advance for a while so that we can be able to engage the minister. Up to date, we have written a minister letter, and as we speak today, we've written him a letter on the 17th of April to request that we meet and finalize the matter. And as we speak today, the meeting has not come back to us. The minister has not come back to us. Another letter was also sent to the president requesting that in the sitting of the IGR, this matter shall be part of the structural engagement. And there was a task team set, and we thought we could be able to bring the voice of local government in how best we can solve the problem of ESCOM. on March 12th, I was advised by different parties that were affected by this of withheld equitable share allocations. And you would know, Chair, that equitable share by its nature is not the condition of government. And therefore, you can't convert it to the conditional by some means, because it has to resolve misplaced problems, salaries, and other things that the misplaced would have to deal with, them, including the poor that we all share that we should be supported. And a bilateral was held with DISARG and National Treasurer on the 1st of April to seek an urgent solution and guarantee on the matter. A special SAGA NEC was convened on the 2nd of April to deliberate and resolve on the matter. And among other things, that the resolutions will be taken by the NEC or SAGA to obtain a legal opinion on the constitutionality of the action by National Treasurer, whether it is necessary for them to convert unconditional grant to conditional grant. Advise the affected ministers not to bind themselves with unsustainable commitments, because the present chair was that if all the ministers are going to run and make commitments, that they can't be sustained. And we later will have to finish it off, and therefore we're not resolving any problems. So we then wrote a letter to the minister requesting agent meeting, and I would have indicated that we have also wrote to the president and the deputy president that we'll be a part of the committee that will be in the crisis in the country, a part of the representation of the local government board. We continue to engage national credit and corporate so that a viable and sustainable solution is required. And I'm sure the officials from COFTA would have indicated and national that we've had a series of meetings after that. And I'm sure we agree with some of the resolve that we came together. The Minister of Culture convened a meeting with all the ministers who were affected, the 20 ministers who were affected, or called top trade. Any discussion was there to see how best can we help to resolve the problem. But going back to the decision, the resolution of the NEC meeting, the caution against imposition of conditions, and as you have made a point, has come as a strategic partner and continue to work with the company based on active partners. So we should have an engagement with ESCOM. I'm sure the point that was earlier is about poor leadership. When the MEC, MMC of Johannesburg just engaged with ESCOM, surely councillors will present the committee. And if they think that something is wrong that ESCOM has told, I think they have all the right to engage. And that can't be called poor leadership when they're supposed to represent the people that they represent. And so we urge, and we've been part of the campaign, that all municipalities should not take an independent decision and populate the media with the problems of ESCOM. So that's why that SAGA will be the voice, and therefore the NEC of SAGA will be able to receive their opinion, and we can try engage. But we've called upon the National Treasury to take a balanced approach to the matter. If I demand that national and provincial government to honor their debts to the municipalities, and I think this point has been made in the meeting, we urge municipalities to initiate a contested credit control. And we have agreed with the Minister of Culture that in actual fact, to get national going back to basic functions, we need all tiers of government to come together and really ensure that we run a campaign about paying of services. And go back to our communities and say, let's all pay for what we see. So it's always quite a concern about the lack of consultation before its action was taken. I'm sure the point that the chair is that the direct implication how we collectively support local government. And there are, as I said, that there are responses that necessarily are unviable. And that's why we engage different networks to get them back to the system. Despite the going back to basic program and action plans being implemented in this party, drastic action was taken before prior dedicated support and intervention as contributed to the section 154 to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And SAGA noted that some of the inputs were unjustly penalized or incorrect information by national treasurers. And I think this issue is also discussed. SAGA raised a concern about the ability of affected people to function without the allocation. As I indicated, that a bigger portion of our municipalities in the country are largely independent to the equitable share, and they do better when that money is allocated. If you suspend the equitable share, in actual sense, you're feeding those municipalities. Okay, it's concerned about misfortune tonight. We have entered into a non-sustainable argument. That's who received the Kitab al-Sheikh. And then I'm sure the issue that we have indicated that we have to go back to Misfal to ensure that they will be able to pay. So they must not just commit on things that they will not be able to take and be able to pay. So as a request to be included in the taxing myself, made the project of the war rooms. We've also noted a number of affections we have received consistent negative audit findings. So there's a correlation between those misfortune that have had poor audit and non-payment. And I'm sure if you look at those misfortunes, you will see that a bigger portion of them are part of those who have received a negative audit finding over years. And when they still are under session, some of them are under session 129 intervention. And that's why you will see that predominantly they are in the Northwest and in Mpumalanga. This is what we are referring to. Going back to benchmarking of this misfortune, should have also been allowed to address the challenge before the drug addiction was taken. So National Treasury went without actually undermining the left. A lot of committees that are on board, that why best, how best can we to resolve this. So we should have also collectively been proactive in holistically dealing with these challenges, including management of credit cards, budget and revenue in general. So, sir, the issue that was raised about why preferential treatment to the two, why do you choose water bottle and that's because it does appear like we National Treasury becomes a support for them to put the money. And that's an issue that some members of raising this matter. So I'm sure that with respect to water and electricity to the population. In some instances, the district is the water service authority, but the local has been appointed as the water service provider. The water board wrongly billing in the local municipality. A bargaining agreement not in place with both water boards, and I'm sure those are issues that we have addressed with the minister. Where Eskom recirculates electricity, no NDAs are in place as required by the Systems Act, impacting on the relationship between Eskom and municipality. And that's a matter that we have also very sharply raised. But within the discourse of going back to basics, we need to go to the details. Surely the minister has set up him to be able to say how we're going to solve this problem. I'm sure the official relevance in COGT has indicated that some work on policy intervention is being initiated. ESCOM reluctant to assist with trade control in every race specifically. And I'm sure when the mayor of Johannesburg addressed, we'll also see some of this that are happening in Orlando that are related to this matter that we're raising. ESCOM is charging extremely high interest prime plus 5%. Maximum demand electrification is too low, leading to constant penalties payable and reluctant ESCOM to increase the same. I have raised on the issue about the capping of missile gas credit cards and the call upon National Treasury to devise a monetary instrument. This is a part of the Section 71 report. We've also noted the issues of underlying the challenges such as budget management, cash flow issues, revenue streams, cost subsidization of services, tariff setting, governance issues. No indication has been given to scenarios where ESCOM would refuse to accept the offer of the municipality to how this will affect the payment of the double share. So the engagement between ESCOM and for some time is undermined. Because sorry, municipality, some of them have gone back to ESCOM to negotiate and see how bad it is. And then when ESCOM arrogantly refused, these issues are not looked at. I'm sure as we engage with both ministers of culture and treasury, and I think we subscribe to the view that it is important that we do also meet with the political leadership of treasury and culture to control this matter. We have made a point that we have made attempts to meet with the minister, and that has come to pass. SAARC has been part of all the interactions between National Treasury and affected municipalities. We need to leave this discussion to a political level. During this, we have noted that impacted municipalities were struggling to meet their current account payments to Eskom and water boards. This is affecting the ability of the municipalities to settle their credit cards. And I'm sure this slide, sir, I also, you find all this content in what the COGT presented at a national level. There has been a series of meetings just to see how best we can respond to this. So I will not repeat what they did. surprised that the political leadership of Mekong were summoned by national federal officials. And we think there's a need for us to create a platform to have a full appreciation of what are the problems at municipal level. Municipalities are sometimes not having a cost defense flexible, and I think this point has been made. The water losses are also something that has been indicated. Many municipalities are willing to enter into payment agreements with ESCOM that are affordable to be responded by ESCOM. But you already indicated that sometimes the display of arrogance by ESCOM is just bizarre, and to a point that we do need a new way to engage. This point has been made in different forums, that there's a way to really create a platform to engage, because in the manner in which ESCOM deals with problems, particularly when there's a municipality providing the service and ESCOM requiring providing service, the clashes and conflict and impact that is in that disaster. You, as I said, the official from COGBA would have made a point that is that you can't have a situation where the two are providing services. It creates serious impacts to a point that community get confused. And the best way for community to engage, they don't go to ESCOM, they go to the municipality, they bench and cancel as well. They go, the whole issue becomes a council responsibility to camp. So there is a need for us to be able to engage. You know, way forward, Chairperson, the municipalities have to attend to the following critical aspects internally. Tariffs need to be cost reflective, and this is a matter that the COGTA have raised, because as a way to develop way forward, we have met with COGTA, national tariffs, but what is the immediate thing that we should be able to do together? And these points are here to reflect what has been our engagement with them moving forward. How to tariffs need to be cost reflective, take account losses. Okay, it's currently in the process of developing a model for determining cost of services. The loss need to be kept at acceptable levels and budgeted for. National tariff adjustment submission need to be performed accurately and in a timely manner. Billing needs to be done accurately. Debt collection and credit control policy and bylaws need to be in place for implementation. And that's an issue that we should have raised in the meeting with the minister. Contractual arrangement with water boards and ESCOM need to be formalized. And these are issues that, as I said, Chair, that we have met. Allow me not to go through all of them. Suffice to indicate that as COGTA was presenting, you would find the same narrative in that, because we met and agreed that we need to do some of the things that are key that of the immediate and long-term issues. And the short-term issues is what is being said. What are the immediate things and other issues that are of the future with the policy, to change the policy regime to respond to how we live with ESCOM. So I think we should, without repeating what they have said.
Thank you very much, Chair. Addition that time, Honorable Chow.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues. Just to comment on the matter raised earlier. And it is a matter that we did raise with ESCOM yesterday when we met with them. I believe that it would be derelict of us as public representatives not to raise concerns when an entire community switched off for more than 10 hours. I just think, especially in a situation where even we are not getting answers as to why the lights are off for 10 hours. When the standard application of load shedding, which is up to 4 hours in Joburg, the idea that the entire Soweto would be off for about 10 hours can't be correct. And I think that to suggest that it would be wrong of us to raise it as a matter is not necessarily correct. I think it would be direct. At least I think that they will express our concerns equally with ESCOM, both publicly and privately with ESCOM, as to our concerns, particularly in relation to their non-responses. The second issue relates to the local government equitable share form, and I'm sure my colleagues have raised this issue. No part of the local government equitable share formula has a credit control provision. Now, Treasury can't act as the credit control division of ESCOM.
If they do want to do that, can they please act as our credit control division? We have a number of matters in dispute with departments of government. So if they are keen to act as the credit control division, they should do that. Because then it means all we have to do is to write to Treasury to say, please don't give them their equitable share formula in terms of the budget. Because equitable share formula is part of the Division of Revenue Act. Now Treasury decides on its own arbitrarily to withhold equitable share, it can't be right. We have no doubt that there are matters that require resolution. And that we need to engage in those matters that require resolution. But it's not a conditional grant. It's not a grant that is one condition that you pay ESCOM, you shall get an equitable share. No part of the equitable share formula does that. And that's why we've sought senior council opinion on that. Because we think that, in fact, Treasury has acted in a manner that is not in line with the law and the Constitution of the Republic. But of course, as indicated in our presentation, we're seeking council opinion on the matter. The last point I thought I should make, Honorable Chair, relates to the assertion by both COGTA and National Treasury that the tariffs might be wrong. Now, the tariffs are approved in terms of tariff guidelines by NERSA. In fact, I opened the tariff guidelines and they indicate how they apply their mind to tariff guidelines. These are prescribed guidelines. Unless there is a suggestion, which would be a very serious issue, that NERSA might not have been diligent in its application of the guidelines, it's a slightly different matter. Because it suggests that we should deal with the matter with NERSA. But if the assertion is that there's a problem in the application of the tariff guidelines, then there's a problem. But we have consistently said, and we've raised this with COGTA in particular over several years, that when we do municipal tariffs, we take a basket of goods approach. We combine a combination of tariffs, take electricity, sanitation, water, rain, refuse collection, and we take into account all sorts of considerations. But the problem we have is that we have asked for different terms from individual departments or regulators. So for water tariffs, you deal with one regulator. For electricity, you deal with a different regulator. And for race and so on, you have to deal with the department. And we've always said that we think it is appropriate that you take a bucket of departments. And in that basket of goods approach, you take into account the viability of municipalities, meaning that you will take into account how they will be able to raise revenue on the basis of the tariffs that they levy. And then you would supplement that with equitable share to the extent that it begins to supplement the capacity of municipalities to undertake the responsibility. And we've consistently argued that to the extent that these are applied, particularly by Treasury, it is quite arbitrary. Because it is a percentage of share that is then distributed as per the equitable share formula. And we said that this is arbitrary. Because to the extent that, in fact, there are instances where other tariffs have to subsidize electricity, we have problems like the one we're encountering now. Because depending on the municipality's size and capacity, different services cross-subsidize each other. And that has to be complemented by equitable sharing. But if you don't take into account the full picture and you deal with them as individual revenue streams, then you are able to have a full picture. It would therefore be appropriate that we sit down and say, this is the baseline per municipality in relation to this contribution of this service and all. Rates, and on the basis of that, this is their participation in equitable share, and this would enable this municipality to have the capacity to execute its responsibility. And we've consistently raised this matter to say, but there's a problem in the way in which these are applied. So, to the extent that Treasury has taken the drastic action that it has taken, I think has been inconsiderate of the vast array of submissions, including the extent which we've corresponded with Treasury on this matter. And to say that, I think as indicated in our presentation, We have not received a response back that says you are right or wrong, or we want to engage. Let us engage on this matter. Because that should at least be a reasonable expectation. To say we've written to you, come back to us, let's engage and discuss and resolve the matter. And to date, we've not received that sort of correspondence that enables us to engage and resolve the matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, of course, you'll come in also if you want to come in. But it seems these are bigger issues that need our discussion. Just to identify policy matters that we have in the nation. I think the department have identified some of them. Some houses identified and infrastructure. I think it's important that we do that. Otherwise, we'll discuss something that doesn't answer that at all. And municipalities and so on. We all know that there are a lot of municipalities that are unviable. That are going to be viable for the near future. Probably members, you wanted to comment? Let me check to say myself. I know that your hometown is not viable.
From the Chinguin, I'm not sure trying to say about the big municipality. I think we sort of viable. No, Chair, I would want to underscore what you have said. I think you are absolutely correct. We may find ourselves sitting into the dark, and I think there are pertinent issues that have been raised on both sides. My biggest misgiving is that the political leadership is not here. I think that in particular point you raised the ministers here, so that we get the necessary responses to the policy question, which have a bearing, of course, on the implementation. I think we would be better served to really share that loud impress upon us that we speedily facilitate that process so we can get the responses. Because I don't think it's healthy, Chair, that Salga would find itself in a position where it needs to take National Treasury to court. Really, I think that once you've reached that type of interaction, that does pose a problem and will muddy the water. So I think let us speedily deal with this matter, prioritize it, and ensure that we get the minister here. Secondly, Chair, quite a number of matters have been raised regarding ESCOM, from attitude and so on. Arrogance has been one of them. I think it would only fair that we also get ESCOM here as well, and to get their side of the story and their interpretation in terms of how things are going on. So imagine that this might need to be a multi-portfolio committee approach between ourselves and finance and public enterprise. So which I would impress on you that in order for us to arrive at a logical and logical conclusion, let us take that approach as we obtain our next action.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I can't agree with my colleagues more. As I indicated in my letter to you, I did request that the ministers be here, I did request that ESCOM be here, etc. Chair, a couple of follow-up questions, and again, a little bit surprised, but for the second meeting in a row, I find myself in full agreement with Salga. pretty much full agreement with Salga.
What is the problem?
No. I'm persuaded by Salga. It's just surprising, because sometimes most of the time I'm not. The last two meetings I have seen, so... But Chairperson, some follow-up questions and some questions weren't answered in the first round of questions to National Treasury and COFTA. Chairperson, first of all, National Treasury indicated that this decision was not taken under Section 216 of the Constitution. And if that's the case, I'd like to know under what authority was taken, because every piece of media correspondence, everything that I've seen today says it was taken under Section 216. So I'd really like to know what authority you have if you didn't use Section 216. Secondly, Chair, the DG of COFTA, he said that national and provincial departments, the accounting officers, stick their neck out and are asked to pay contested accounts, and they don't like to do that. That's why they don't pay. But essentially what you're asking the municipality to do here is stick their necks out and pay contested accounts. Because in many instances we've heard that they are incorrectly billed for water or other services, that those accounts are then contested, and yet we are expecting them to pay, or else they don't get their equitable share grant. I also asked the question earlier about Section 139 and why well, Section 139 and Section 154, and I didn't get an answer to this question as to why those steps were not taken. Only 13 of the 60-odd municipalities that have been identified here have ever been under Section 139 administration. Now, if that's the case, how can we then go to such a draconian step as withholding their share? In fact, the Financial and Fiscal Commission report asks the exact same question, and yet I didn't get an answer to that. Then, the DG spoke about the accounting officer in the municipality, even if it's under administration, is an accounting officer and that person is responsible for payment. But if it's under administration, the accounting officer is the administrator appointed by the province. And therefore, province should be held accountable for non-payment within the state account frame and not the municipality. You can't then hold some municipal official if they have no authority to make that payment. The person that's responsible is the accounting officer, who is the administrator, who is appointed by the province. So I'd really like some clarity on that issue. Chairperson, then also, the comment was made that the equitable share intended to provide bulk services for indigents. Well, then, if we're going to withhold the equitable share, surely we're cutting off bulk services to indigent consumers. And that just makes no sense whatsoever. Chairperson, we've had no clarity from National Treasury. They've spoken about the 26 municipalities that have entered into payment arrangements and have the funds have been released to them. But we have no indication as to which municipalities those are and which have not yet received and which you have not yet met with and why you have not yet met with them. You indicate that there were 29 odd municipalities, I think, that you have not yet met with. I don't understand. If this is of such an important nature, why have you not yet met with those municipalities? And then lastly, and I don't know who to address this question to, is why hasn't the interest rate issue been discussed with ESCOM? There was an indication that this is something that people have to discuss with ESCOM, the interest rate, 5+5%. Why have we not discussed it? I mean, it's been something that's been coming for years and years and years. We've known about this problem. Why are we now in a crisis that we're withholding money from municipalities, but this matter still has not yet been discussed with ESCOM? Thank you, Chair.
No.
That's what the supernote, the SABC,
he's been putting that measure for the whole week. Is he a spokesperson for the
The SABC are reporting meeting. There is some, it's an open sub meeting. I'm not a spokesperson. Yes,
no. No, 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 I don't want to matter. Okay, let us record the one past there and then put it there and like put it. And then, okay, call it. Let us move on. Honorable Maton.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to just have a few comments. The first one is really that in my past interaction with ESCOM, I've always been struck by the sense of arrogance in the way that ESCOM officials conduct themselves. And I do think that this committee must really engage with ESCOM so that we can have a sense of why is it that they seem to act the way they act in relation to some of these matters, like the cutoffs for a period of over, say, 10 hours, as has been mentioned. And that officials in general should stop acting as if they are public representatives. This is a problem that we have to deal with going forward. Not that the officials do not have views, but the perception of arrogance is really a big problem. The second issue is again a matter of perception. This whole problem of the president being seen as this all-powerful unit of government, or department of government, that has limitless powers. And that sometimes they even come across as overriding political considerations. It's a problem, I think, that must manage both through the Department of Economy, the Department of Finance, but also it's something that should worry the Treasury. Because if this is not dealt with, it is bound to do a lot of damage, not just to Treasury, but to the Finance Department. The Treasury people, I'm sure, who are here would agree that this is not a unique first-time experience of them to hear of Treasury being spoken of in this terms. It's an issue that you must really deal with the chapter. Overall, I think that Salga has presented a strong, coherent case, and that the issues that they've raised would deserve some attention. And that this matter will have to be examined quite carefully in the near future, with a view really of engaging in a manner such as that the matter is being dealt with exhaustively. So, Representative, I'm just making those comments, hoping that moving into the future, these matters would be managed better than has been the case in the past, few days.
But why has it taken so long? 15 years of local government. But it seems this problem has been there for not too long. It's very strange. I'm not sure what is the reason. No one is taking the reason why the matter could not be resolved in terms of the department, the foster, cluster, the portfolio committees, that's one about the department in terms of insults and everyone. Because some of these matters have been raised long time ago. Insults, I pray. I guess also you are a shepherd, no father yourself, or not only you raise this matter. You don't have 10 years ago, but it is not resolved. And there's no movement towards that. There's nothing wrong done. That has to be addressed. I hope my daughter is here. There's something bigger there. And I think the point that the minister is supposed to be here upon the extent of the apology. But you are going to engage with them on this. You have to resolve this thing. Because we have identified also policy issues, but identify policy issues. Manhattan is already persuaded by SARS, which means that is a point level. We all agree. Of course, also, Manhattan says in the Congress, our enemies, poverty, unemployment, inequality. But it's time that Manhattan was saying that. And then there's a lot of shift general that is happening in our country. But it's at the policy level. We agree, general, that our country will be managed. But I'm not sure why we can't just start questions. Because even if we can run away from them, 10 years down the line, we want to take up that.
Thank you. Just to respond to three concepts. So firstly, around the Section 216. I may have misinterpreted your question, but I responded by saying that no authority has been placed under Section 216. Which is the truth. There is no authority under the process that has been placed under Section 216. The petition that we tried to invoke was the MFMA Section 65. So though under that section of the MFMA, we have done what we did. The second one around the, I think there was concern raised about National Treasury becoming debt collectors. We are not debt collectors for anyone. The Honourable Chair, Honourable Milham also raised that. What we're saying is, if you look at our presentation again, and this is on the second slide, and the last point that we're making, we're saying that Eskom and Water Board are the highest creditors that are owed Mithalki. Now, and Mr. Tahidi in his presentation said that if we were to neglect this, it downgrades our sovereign rating. And which is typical. And I'm saying here that Eskom and Water Board's financials have declined. And what is the consequence of that if it declines? If it declines, it means its services are interrupted. If services are interrupted, municipalities are the ones that get the consequences. They suffer the consequences. And then ultimately, the customer on the ground suffer the consequences of this. So we're saying this is the reason why we have pushed Eskom and Water Board to the highest. But remember, initially I said that the ultimate aim was to focus on creditors on the whole. It's just consequence that Eskom and Water Board are the highest that we've dealt with. And the last point is, we agree. If there's issues raised with Eskom, we think, and in the other instances where there are disputes, we're saying that the authorities have not demonstrated to us that if you have a dispute, that the money is kept aside until the dispute is resolved. We find that through our analysis of and engagement with these municipalities, that even though they raise a dispute, and we're not sure whether raising a dispute is just a delaying tactic on their part. We're saying that if you raise a dispute with your customer, with your provider, which is Eskom, then at least keep money aside in the event the dispute is resolved, that you can pay Eskom whatever is agreed upon. But we don't find, the council suggests that there is no money kept aside in order for the dispute to be resolved. And that's our concern. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, my concern. Any concluding remarks?
Thank you very much. I suppose an important observation has been made that these issues cannot be discussed conclusively without the presence of the political authorities of consent. Clearly what is now required is for a fair session to be arranged in which both ministers of finance and the minister of cooperative finance and trade and affairs would be available to engage in this discussion. So we will convey that to our minister. I'm sure my colleagues from the Treasury will do the same to the Minister of Finance. We will then await an invitation for that kind of engagement to take place. It would be a good idea if on that occasion we also have perhaps I'm agreeing with the Honourable Member Millingham that ESCOM must be present because there are a number of matters that pertain to what they do which has a bearing on matters of policy. It would be a good idea, I believe, for ESCOM to be present. But I don't know whether this discussion is only limited to ESCOM, because there are water boards being made reference to in the presentation from both the Treasury and ourselves, that the water boards themselves might well have to be represented. It's better feel if we can have the Minister of Water Affairs, Water and Sanitation present, so that a much fuller conversation is held, and the outcome thereof are things that we can do something about. If policy changes are required, the relevant minister would need to champion those. And to the extent that such policy shifts may impact on the work of the enterprises such as water boards, ESCOM and the like, that there too some shifts are also brought about to make sure that we are able to obviate the need of having to convene in this way to try and deal with the same matters. It seems to me, Chairperson, that's the way forward that is coming out of here. And we certainly support that.
Sorry, my questions still haven't been answered. I have some very specific questions and they have not been answered. Can I address them again?
Okay, I asked what is the authority? I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. Finish. I asked, under what authority are you withholding the ethical share? Grant, you said it's under Section 65 of the MMA. I just read through Section 65, there's nothing in that section that grants National Treasury the right to withhold funds from municipalities. Not one word in that section. So, I don't know if we have the wrong section here or what, but there's nothing there that talks to it. The only thing that talks to it is Section 216 of the Constitution, which says that National Treasury may enact a legislation of general application to municipalities and then withhold funds if there is a ongoing material breach of that legislation or regulation. And that has not been shown here. So either it's 216 or it's not, but I'd really like some clarity on that one. Secondly, my question to the DG about Section 139. When a municipality is under Section 139 administration, who is the accounting officer and who is then liable for payment? I haven't had an answer to that. I asked which municipalities have you not yet spoken to? It indicated there were 29 municipalities. What are they? And why have you not spoken to them? And then I asked, and this was to everybody, why has the interest rate not been discussed with ESCOM? Those questions have not been answered yet.
Do you
have some questions? Thanks. Let me take the last one on why is the interest rate is not discussed with ESCOM. We have had a discussion with ESCOM on the issue of the interest rate and the issue of the 15 days. We had this discussion at a technical level last year, and we felt that this matter, the way in which we were getting the responses, it will require an engagement at the level of either the shareholder, which is DPE, or the ELCOM board. Now, the reason why we went to those engagements, it was immediately after ELCOM had written an intention to cut off electricity in some of the municipalities. And what we did was to look at the invoice of ELCOM towards this municipality. One municipality was having an invoice of around 80 million. And when we started to disaggregate, we realized that around 80 million was more on interest and all the issues around notified maximum demand. But because they were not clear in terms of why they are using the 15 days and why this prime plus 5 and why you will continue to say we are going to be taxing you on the notified maximum demand, which is the reserve capacity, and why you leave municipalities that are not utilizing this for 6 months because you could release that energy to other areas. Then we felt that these are policy questions that need to be elevated to our principles. So that engagement has happened at the technical level, but it requires to go into the political level so that at least it becomes a policy matter that we may need to deal with. I thought I just wanted to say that engagement at the technical level has happened.
Well, I've been invited, so I certainly can't refuse the invitation. As to who is responsible in the event of a Section 139 intervention where the administrator has been appointed by the province, I suspect that is a matter of law. I haven't looked at the law to be able to express the view with any degree of certainty as to whether it's the province that becomes responsible or not. I say this advisedly because whereas the province is the one that appoints an administrator, the administrator effectively substitutes all functionaries within the municipality. In that sense, it is not clear, at least to my mind, as I think about it, as to whether you would impute the responsibility on the province purely on the basis that it is the one that appoints the administrator. Or in fact, that responsibility rests on the shoulders of the administrator, being the person that has taken over the responsibility of both the administration as well as the they do so on top of the province, yes. But you assume responsibility, you assume an office. And that office has responsibilities that attend it. So I don't think I don't want to guess, I don't want to be accused of having misled this committee. But it's not it's certainly a matter of law. And the answer to that question would have to be carefully considered. And there are various implications to it, and I can't give any response with any degree of sanctity at this point. But we can revert to you on that.
Thank you, Chair. So the question around the 216 as well as the MFMA clause has to be read in conjunction with DORA. And if I may have the permission, I can provide the narrative to that, to the Honourable Member, an hour after this meeting. So I didn't find it as important that we were using. The point raised about the municipalities that were affected, of the city municipalities, I have a share that I can share with the House on all the municipalities that we met with and those that we haven't met with, and the amounts that we've leased, I could will share to us. So I can make that available as well.
Don't you think that surely the law should be the other move because you have to use the mantra that is going to add everyone? Surely
would be able to call to the case law.
Because
we wouldn't apply this without having studied. We don't know what are the issues. $50 is not very new and
expensive.
If it is a constitutional court, you throw it. It's just a problem because if a matter of faith that is very one of us, we can't exactly say which law are we applying where the truth is at. Therefore, it becomes a problem. But you have to assist us, you know, you may not be a lawyer. That's the reason you say that. Surely, really, people who come to the court committees, but we want to say. Because we make us by and large, you must be informed by the very actual. Otherwise, it becomes a general discussion that is not very challenging to address some of the matters. But surely, every knows that very well, that everyone who comes before the government will anticipate the answers. Because naturally, the member of parliament will raise other questions that are not necessarily in what you are presenting to them. And surely, the expert is, I think, very important that we do that. So that you assist us then to dispel doubts whether it's one X or whether it's 216 or applying another one. And then because then members will be informed when they engage a policy level, they know already what they need. If there is no X, then it's a decision. Then it's a piece of problem. But then I think we will allow you space here to come back.
That's the follow-up question. Is it possible that the president should supply the basic information before the end of the day today in writing? I mean, the chairperson of the committee.
I'm not certain whether that comment extends to my response. Regarding section 139, of course we will be more than happy to provide a written response, but second, you will be aware of the fact that there will be various permutations. If for an example we're talking about section 139B, you have an administrator who operates alongside a council, then the council is still there. Still takes full accountability. But if it's section 139C, then it dissolves the council, then the administrator takes over both responsibilities. Now, whether.
But that's section 139I, which talks about serious emphasis on financial breach. That's what's essentially happening. And I'm sorry, but there are processes that should follow and that should be followed and put in place if this is going to happen. It's not being done. Now, I want to know why. And I'm not getting a clear answer. Maybe we need to wait and hear what the department has said. I think it's reasonable to give them a little bit of time to prepare a response in that case. But certainly, it's not limited to section 139, 1C or D. There's also section 139, subsection 5, which talks to serious financial needs, which I would argue addresses the issue directly.
Okay, we'll hear that one.
Chair, I apologize for the not knowing the exact clause that was relevant. If I may answer it now, according to DORA, section 18.1.3, where it indicates that the pen schedule of the equitable share municipalities had been amended. So that is the clause relevant to that. It has to be read in conjunction with MFA section 65, as well as, I have to stress that no municipality has been picked under section 216 of the Act. I have made that very clear. So the relevant clause is under DORA, section 18.1C.
it's 18.2.
Okay. Now, for we the matter here that we still have a discussion on, and the leadership of Talca, any concluding remarks from that point?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. That has to indicate that we share the concerns of the Honorable Members, that it is quite unfortunate that Treasury does not seem to be clear which section of the law it used to withhold the money. It is quite unfortunate, particularly as we are having this discussion, that has seriously impacted our member municipalities. That notwithstanding, Treasury nor COCTA has not indicated why these preferential creditors, except to suggest that, yeah, when we intervene on behalf of ESCOM and the water board, we're worried about their creditors and we're talking to them, but there is no law that says ESCOM and the water board rank above other creditors. So it was actually an arbitrary action by Treasury. And to date, at least from up until this meeting, at no point has anybody indicated who moved ESCOM into a preferential credit. Because they must say, no, I mean, these are creatures of statute. So you can't be that decisions are made in an arbitrary fashion. And then we are invited to come and engage in Parliament, and we're not getting reference to actually this is the law that enabled us to shift this creditor into a preferential position. So we do think, Honorable Chair, that it would be important that this matter be resolved. Of course, we agree with the Honorable Members that it would be quite unfortunate if we should seek recourse outside Parliament and Government to resolve this matter. But to the extent that they are impacting on our members' ability to execute their daily responsibilities, it places us in the unenviable position to seek that sort of opinion and action being considered. And I think that it would be helpful if, in fact, we engage with that appreciation that, as Talca, on behalf of our members, we cannot keep quiet if they can't pay salaries and they can't execute their responsibilities. We have to do something, and to the extent that the responses are inadequate, leave us with very little room to maneuver. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I would like also to take this opportunity to indicate to members that this act has exacerbated the problem that municipalities is faced with, particularly for those municipalities that are non-viable. It is the municipality where in the first case, I would like to say, where now, workers have just came with a work stoppage. Now our citizens are no more getting water. They are not even getting the necessary services for energy, simply because of this act. Because there is an element of cross-subsidization at the end of the day when it comes to budgetary matters. And I will request that through the assistance of the committee, this matter be resolved timelessly, because then the consequences are other matters that we will not be able to handle when it comes to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, just as I expected, that we have had a very good discussion, at least all of us now are informed about the challenge that we have. This is actually a concern, I guess, of all these matters of some kind to those who are concerned. And they face a situation that is very difficult, although not of their making. Hello, Joyce, I'm going to talk more.
and then I think those who are deployed there, and I think those five very difficult countries in that situation. What when people do that anyway, they won't talk about treasure. So just talk about the counselor next to them. That is not what I hear counselor is responsible. For the counselor to say that the national is responsible is too late. Because one government, whoever is there, is responsible for the problem that they're facing. I think that would be addressed, and of course the first candidate should also be here. We'll have a discussion and see what we can do. And I think we'll give us information that is outstanding, just for us again to honor ourselves and have a discussion on some of these issues. And thanking the leadership of Falcon for coming. We understand the challenges, because it's a very heavy challenge. So these municipalities that are non-viable, even the one that they're saying why but one word is not bad. And then it's going to find it very difficult. That's why I want the answer to that. It knows that it's very difficult to clarify why it's difficult and what happened. And I think next you are going to do that. And then also will also assist us on that by identifying policy issues. That must be discussed within the structure that has the policy issue. Okay, so thank you very much, colleagues, for your attendance. One of the members will remain, will allow our colleagues to be excused, but members will remain and will finalize one item on our agenda. Okay, thank you very much, colleagues, and we will meet again in a very short time. Thank you.
Good job. That's right. I don't know.